And I would like to just very briefly share on perhaps what really should be our underlying motive to doing whatever, serving the Lord in whatever way. And I can remember in one assembly sharing on similar things, what we've been talking about in these days, and a brother came up to me afterwards and he said, well, he said, you know, it's really, you know, it's good what you said, but I really think that, you know, the really important thing, the most important thing we should be doing as Christians, and if we're all doing it, then everything would be solved. And I said, well, what's that? And he said, well, that's doing the first commandment. And then he quoted, and I'll just read it from where he quoted, I think, if I can find it, in, I think it's in Luke 9. Yes, 27. Sorry, Luke 10, 27. When we go back, now a certain teacher of the law in verse 25 got up and to put him through a test, and he asked, teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus asked him, what is written in the law? How do you read it? And the teacher of the law answered, you must love the Lord your God with your whole heart, your whole soul, your whole strength, your whole mind, and your neighbors yourself. And Jesus told him, you have answered correctly, do this, and you will live. And his brother said, well, you know, that's what I believe is the most important thing. If we really were loving God with all our heart and our neighbor as ourselves, then we'll be doing what God wants us to do, and also the world would get evangelized. And in some ways, I agreed with him. But then I went back home and I thought about it. I actually went and looked up the verse, and I kept on reading just to get it in its context. And in its context is what I would like to just share briefly on this evening. In verse 29, because the story goes on, he's answered correctly. He's got it right in theory. But wishing to absolve himself, asked Jesus, and who is my neighbor? And Jesus replied, and then he goes on to give the parable of the Good Samaritan. We all know it, don't we? The Good Samaritan. And I think it's very interesting to, again, just see the context that this parable of the Good Samaritan is given in. It's given in where someone is, he knows. And I think we all would agree that as Christians we should be loving God with all our heart, with all our soul, all our mind, all our strength, and in consequence, our neighbour as ourselves. But many times we like to, I don't think we even realise we do it, but within we try and get ourselves out of the actual implications, the practical implications of that. This fella, he tried to do it by saying, well, who is exactly my neighbour? And, you know, I would just like you to just think for a minute, how do we actually, well, we've been talking about loving God or obeying God, our commitment to God, but sometimes that can even be very vague. You know, sometimes we think, well, loving God with all our heart is to come along to the meeting, having our quiet time. And yet in 1 John, it says that if we say that we love God and we hate our brother, then we've really got it wrong. We're fooling ourselves and we're not in the light. And so there's a practical, and there's always practical implications of, if I say, well, I love God, well, that means that in my life, and especially with other people, then that needs to be showing in a practical way. And so how do we love our neighbour? Have you thought of that one? Well, you know, sometimes I think, and the sort of general gist of the conversation, what I understood with this fellow was getting at, that we had this conversation with, that, you know, if we just sort of, you know, don't, you know, my neighbour next door or the people I, you know, brush shoulders with, and if we don't sort of steal from them, or if we don't lie to them, or if we don't, you know, swear to them or get angry, you know, too angry with them, or if we don't, you know, throw our garbage on their lawn, or if we don't steal their mail or whatever, then we're loving them. We're giving good testimony. And that's all we have to do. We definitely have to do that. But I really think that Jesus, when he comes along with this parable, he wants to take it even further than that. And we have the parable of the rich man. I'll just read through it again, just in case we've forgotten how it goes. But he goes on, he says, "A certain man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among robbers, who stripped and pummeled him and ran off, leaving him half dead. Coincidentally, a certain priest was coming down that road, and seeing him, passed on the other side. In the same way, a Levite arrived at the spot, saw him and passed on the other side. Then a certain Samaritan came there as he travelled, saw him and took pity on him. And going to him, he bandaged his wounds, poured oil and wine into them, and set him on his own donkey. He took him to an inn and looked after him. The next morning, he took out and handed the innkeeper 2 pence and said, 'Take care of him. Whatever further expense you incur, I will refund you when I come back.' And then Jesus asked, 'Which of these three do you think was really neighbour to the one who fell among the robbers?' And he said, 'The one who was merciful to him.' And Jesus told him, 'You go and do the same.'" So let's just take this Samaritan and just think a little bit practically why he actually did what he did. I think we should go first to his motive. You know, he didn't have to do what he did. He didn't have to do it. I think that's the first thing that we should have clear. Just the same as that we don't have to do many things. I mean, as I said, when we come to the table and remember all that God has done for us, he's done it for us freely. We don't have to earn it. And we don't have to then go later on and prove that we're good Christians or continue earning his love. We don't have to. But I really believe that if we've come to experience the love of God in our heart, come to understand and experience his mercy and his grace, then our heart is going to be changed. And it's interesting to see how Jesus puts it in describing the reason why this Samaritan, who didn't have to help this fellow who had been robbed and was left half dead, why he actually went out of his way and helped him. It says here in verse 33, and then it says, "A certain Samaritan came there as he travelled, saw him and took pity on him." In other versions, you could say he was moved to compassion. There was a feeling there. You know, he sees a person in need and his heart tells him, "You need to do something." And I really believe that, you know, as we go on in our life, in our Christian life, you know, it's not just a head thing. I'm a very, you know, as a man, I'm a very head person. You know, I do all my thinking with my head. My wife, you know, she's a lady, and she does all the thinking with her heart. And I've learned a lot from her and from women that, you know, we need to sometimes think more with our hearts and not so much with our heads. But I tell you, ever since I've come to know personally what Jesus has done for me, you know, there are a lot more things that move me and touch my heart than when I was living just for myself and just thinking for myself and looking after myself. And I can remember my testimony when I first experienced God's forgiveness in my life. I mean, I wanted to share that with other people, with my friends, with the ones who I'd been wrongly involved in. Just thinking how wrong I had done by getting them mixed up in things that were going to hurt them. That moved me. I can remember when I first went out of Australia and got involved in short-term Christian work and went to South America. I can remember the first third world country that I saw in Mexico and just seeing how people live, just seeing the poverty. That moved me.
I mean, I can remember going to churches in those countries, and you know, people would spend half the time crying in those churches, and just seeing, and I could just, you know, just feel, and I said, well, you know, if I was living in that situation, in that poverty, and those problems, and those needs, I mean, I would cry too. And just going and visiting them homes, you know, where they just don't have anything near what we have, and yet they're so willing to give. I mean, I've literally been in Christian homes in some of these third world countries where they invite you for the meal and they kill their last chicken to give you a meal because they want to give you the best. And they'll stand there by your table. It used to really annoy me, actually, though, especially in Mexico. They would, you know, serve you the meal, and then they stand there beside you and sort of watch you eat, and every time the plate goes down half full, they'd fill it up again. But that moved me. And when I saw the way people were responding to the gospel, the interest, the hunger, that moved me. And I tell you, after a short time there, and definitely after 3 years in South America, I mean, I could just never go back and live just peacefully with just forgetting what I had seen, and forgetting just how needy most of the world is, and how needy most of the world is for the gospel, and just the opportunities, and to be able to get in and do something and help. You know, I thought, you know, how can I go back and live and forget that? That moved me. And I think when I, and again, as we work in Spain with the, as we shared with the drug addicts, I mean, when you see how people live when they're under bondage, I mean, you know, you can just say, well, a drug addict or an alcoholic, and they're not hopeless, and they got themselves into that, and all of this. But when you start getting to see how they really live, or how they're not living, their struggles, their fears, you know, it moves me. When I meet people who are lonely, you know how many lonely people there really are? You know, people put up fronts, you know, people, you know, even if they haven't got seemingly problems, you know, many times they're lonely. That moves me. When I think of where people are going with their lives, people who don't have Jesus in their life, and even if they live a good life or have a good life here in this world, where they're going to pass eternity, that moves me. You know, I really think that we need to really allow God just to continue to break our hearts and give us compassion for people. So many times we think of Christian service or work just in terms of work, in terms of things. So many times we think of life just in terms of things. And yet we're talking about people. And God is talking about people. And Jesus came and died for people. And He came and He died for this person. And He died for every person. And He wants us to see people the same way as He sees people. And we see here the parable that He's giving. The Samaritan is going along his way. He doesn't have to do anything, but he sees and he is moved to compassion. And I really would, I really believe that God gives us opportunities, to see things, to see needs, He even gives us burdens. And don't be afraid to follow a little bit more your heart, not just your head. Now, this fellow could have followed his head. You know, the priest and the Levite, the other two, the bad guys, you know, the ones who say, well, you know, they're the ones who didn't do the right thing. They saw and they went past because they obviously really think they used their head. They're probably smarter than the Samaritan. They're probably more intelligent. You know, many times we think they were just, you know, they really didn't care. But I think they had good reasons for not getting involved. This road, I'm told, was quite a well-used road going to Jerusalem. Where is it? From Jerusalem to Jericho, where I'm told that a lot of the priests, where they didn't have to be in the temple all of the time, used to be like a shift work. Sometimes yes and sometimes no. And many of them lived in Jericho. And when it was their time to work, or when it was their time to do their temple duties, they would then make this journey. I'm told that it's quite a hilly road, and it had a reputation for being a dangerous road where there were known to be a lot of robbers who robbed the people who made this journey. So you just think of these two people, the priest and the Levite, who either are going to work from Jericho to Jerusalem to work in the temple, or coming back from work back home. Now, if they were going to work, they probably had to get there on a certain time. If they were going to work, if they were a priest, then, you know, there was laws for the priest that if they're going to do their priestly duties, they couldn't be contaminated. They couldn't touch anything unclean. And definitely touching a dead person would make them unclean, and then they wouldn't be able to do their priestly duties. If they're coming back from their work, they're in a hurry to get home. They're tired. They've got a family waiting for them. If they're going along and they see this person there, half dead, I mean, how do they know that it's not a trap? Maybe the robbers have, you know, it seems like they used to do that too. Leave someone there seemingly half dead on the road. You go and help him and then boom, they get you. It could be a trap. You have to be careful. I'm sure they used their head. They had duties to do. They had commitments. They had family. They had jobs. There was a risk involved. And they didn't have to get involved. And they didn't. But the Samaritan did. And I think as we, you know, go through life, you know, we have commitments, we have families, we have jobs, we have schedules, we have to be wise what we do. We have to be careful of the traps in life and the problems. People eye out to make use of us and to get the most out of us. But I really believe, again, that's where we have to sometimes trust God. And we have to sometimes walk by faith. And where many times we have to, instead of just going coolly and coldly and calculated, you know, from home to work, back home, in our life, with our things, with our own life, where we need to sometimes take risks. Sometimes we have to get out of the way. Sometimes we have to go where we see a need. Sometimes we have to get involved with people, even though it might be at our own expense and risk. As God gives us opportunities to see, and He's going to, as God gives us, lays burdens on your hearts, you're going to have to, as I've been sharing in these couple of days, many times take risks. Get your hands dirty. Get into situations where maybe you don't know what's going to happen or what the next step is going to be. And I was just interested just find out a little bit about the history of the beginnings and how it all happened with the Christian school here. And you definitely had to take risks. Get involved in situations where you didn't know what was going to happen. And you know, Christian life is like that. And I would just encourage you to not to go through life just coolly, safely, all the time, and letting go and pass by the many, because there are many opportunities that God is going to give us where we can get involved with people. Because we're in the people business. Jesus is in the people business. And we need to allow the God to put burdens on our hearts. We need to respond as God gives us opportunities, even though it might be a risk, even though it might mean that we can't properly perhaps control or know how it's going to turn out. But that's what service is all about. And I was actually going to share about that this evening. But we have that example of Jesus, where He says that He came here not to be served, but to serve and to give His life a ransom for many. Even when He was having His last supper with His disciples, even when He was there trying to just explain to them what He was going to do and what it really meant, you know, we know, you remember what the disciples were doing? They were arguing about who was going to be the greatest, who was going to have the most important position. They had it all calculated, you know, that, you know, He's going to bring in the kingdom and we're going to be the ones there in the top job, and who's going to be the greatest? Missing the mark completely. And Jesus says, you should not be like that. Because I've come to give my life, to serve, and you should do the same. Christian life, Christian service, mission work, ministry, whatever, it's one of serving. Loving God and loving our neighbours as self is serving. Serving. And that doesn't need training, it doesn't need intelligence, doesn't need professionalism, it doesn't need much preparation. Many times it's just the opportunity when it comes, when you see it, to respond, to trust God, get involved, and you're responding with the love that you've experienced from God, and you want to share that. Now maybe you don't even know how to do it properly, but you know God is going to help us. And I think, you know, into the, just the last point, when we think of this, what the Samaritan did, it's interesting to also think who exactly Jesus is giving here as the example of the person who's the good one, the good guy. I mean, have you ever thought sometimes Jesus, when he made up his parables, he didn't really make them up the right way? Could have made them up better, should have been in a different way. I mean, don't you think he should have done it where he's talking to Jews and he's saying, well, you know, the bad guys, the ones who didn't really respond properly were the priest and the teacher and these professional guys, and you just see the Jews saying, yeah, that's right, you know, they're sort of up there and they're not really involved with where the problems are. And you know, Jesus should have then gone on and said, well, it was just an ordinary Jew, you know, a carpenter or you know, just an ordinary everyday Jew who actually went out and helped the fella who was hurt. But he didn't. He went even further away and he chose a Samaritan who to the Jews wasn't even a Christian. He wasn't even in the race to get to heaven. He completely lost it. He was a pagan, he was a heathen, he was an outcast. And Jesus chose that person who's the one who's actually acting like a Christian should act. And many times, it's the non-Christians. It's the people who have even got more to lose than ourselves, who've got less love or less help than ourselves, who don't even know God, who are doing more, who are showing more compassion than we are. And that's sad. And that's sad. And we see that how this Samaritan actually got involved. It wasn't just going over and showing compassion. It was getting involved in a practical way. In 34 we said, him going to him, and he bandaged his wounds, he pours oil and wine onto them, sets him on his own donkey, took him to the inn, looked after him. Next morning he took out and handed the innkeeper 2 pence and said, take care of him, whatever further expense you incur, I will refund you when I come back. Have you ever thought what that practically means nowadays? You know, here's a fella, half, you know, bleeding all over the place, probably a drunk or a drug addict, whatever. You know, he puts him in his car, gets his carpet all dirty, the car seat's all dirty, takes him to a, you know, puts medicine, whatever on him, then he takes him to a hospital, an inn, and sort of says, well, whatever this fella is going to spend, I'll pay it. I mean, isn't that a risk? Wasn't that really getting his hands dirty? Wasn't that a financial burden? I mean, wasn't that getting involved? Yes, it was. And that's what Jesus, that's the point Jesus is getting to. I mean, didn't Jesus take a big risk coming here? Spend his time in this world? I mean, he could have lost his life. He did. You know, he could have been totally rejected. He was. He could have been completely misunderstood. He was. He could have been completely taken advantage of. That's what happened. And yet he did it because he loved us. And he did it to save us. And Jesus says in verse 37, he said, the one who was merciful, well, he asked him, he says, well, which one is actually showing as the real neighbor to the one who fell among the robbers? And of course, the fellow couldn't get out of that one. He said, the one who was merciful to him. And Jesus told him, you go and do the same. And it makes me, when we're thinking of showing mercy, I'd just like to finish off with an example that I've always liked in the Old Testament of the King David in showing mercy. You know, what exactly is showing mercy? What does that mean? In chapter 9, when in 2 Samuel, when David eventually comes into power as a king, and usually what happened in those days was when a new king comes in, he makes his throne secure by killing all of the family of the previous king, just to make sure that no one later on tries to kick him off the throne. That was the done thing. That was the safe thing. And David is in a situation where he has all power. He's got his throne established. He's the richest man in the country. He's got everything he needs. And yet, one day he's sitting there, and he starts thinking, and he says, is there still anyone left of the house of Saul, who was the king before him, the one actually who had really given him a hard time, who tried to kill him, hunted him and kicked him out of the country, to whom I may show kindness for Jonathan's sake? Now Jonathan, we know, was David's best friend, the son of Saul. Actually, in other versions, it says, you know, that he would like to not only show kindness, but he would like to show mercy. And he makes inquiries. He inquires, and he eventually finds out that yes, there is a fellow who I always have problems pronouncing his name, Mephibosheth. Is that right? Okay, it's hard to pronounce, but it's even harder to do what David did with this fellow, who he finds out is actually crippled. Now again, in the times of David, a cripple is nobody. You know, he's got nothing going for him. You know, he's just a burden. He's a social outcast. And you just keep in mind, David doesn't need the friendship of this fellow. He doesn't need anything that this fellow might be able to give him. This fellow is even actually a threat to him, because he could later on maybe try and kick him off the throne. And yet, David wants to show kindness. He wants to show mercy to someone who he remembers and he loves. And so he gets this fellow to come, and this fellow, of course, is shaking in fear, and he realizes the situation that David can just kill him. And it's interesting to see that David, you know, he says to him they shouldn't be afraid, that he wants to do him kindness, he wants to show mercy to him. And what he does, he actually takes him into his own household. He actually has him to eat with him at his own table, and he looks after him for the rest of his life. Now you can just imagine the palace and the you know, the situation of the meal time, when the king comes in and all the king's sons and daughters come in. Supposedly they're really handsome, stately, royal, healthy, strong lot. You know, I mean, they're really. It must be a really impressive sight, and then all the rest. And then in shuffles all Mephibosheth, crippled. Doesn't even belong to the family. An outcast, an enemy. And every day, every mealtime, there he comes. And eats at the very table of the family of the king. And that's because the king wants to show him mercy. Now didn't Jesus do that for us? I mean, isn't he continually just showing us mercy? I mean, do we deserve his forgiveness? Do we deserve him to come and save us? Do we deserve him to come and look for us? To come and save us again? Do we deserve him to accept us into his own family, into his own household, and to enjoy all of the blessings and all the privileges of a son of God? Do we deserve that? We don't deserve that. And yet, we're experiencing that. And that's why Jesus says, well, that's how I want you to treat others. And I think that should be our motive as we go on in life. And wherever God leads us, wherever God wants to use us, wherever God gives us opportunities, let's be willing to respond with compassion to people. Get involved, whatever the risk might be, and to really seek to show mercy, serve. That's what Christian work is all about. And I can remember when my first year of Spain, as I said before, I had a very serious car accident. And we went to Portugal from Barcelona. There were three of us, and we were coming back in the night, long travelling, long hours. And I was sleeping in the back of the car with another brother. And another person was driving, who seemingly he must have fallen asleep at the wheel, and we had a head-on collision with a truck. And I woke up I'd been sleeping in the back of the car, and I woke up in the middle of the highway, right in the middle of nowhere, and found that I couldn't move. I had my back fractured, my column spine fractured. And I don't know how long I was there, but there was the three of us and the truck driver, so there was four of us there, all lying over the place, and it was obviously a bad accident. And I can tell you that there was many cars that went by and didn't stop. And I can remember, you know, vaguely even at least once, and I think twice, I might be wrong, but I can remember at least once, somebody even stopping the car and coming up and looking at us and then getting back and going on and not wanting to get involved. And I can remember just how hopeless and how afraid, you know, one feels to know, well, what's going to happen to me. And I would really, I mean, eventually, the police came, the ambulance came. But, you know, people without Christ are in the same situation. And people really, without God, when they get into problems, they've got no one to turn to, really, who can help them. And God has left us here to reach, to help, to serve, to show mercy, to share the gospel, so that people can be helped and people can be saved. And I hope that in our Christian life, we're not leaving people on their own just along beside the highway. So may God bless you.